who is the leader of Top Party, and we're going to be talking about their policy, universal basic income, as we lead up to the election. We're only about 17 months away. Kia ora, Ralph. How are you?
Kia ora, Shannon. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
I've been
on a one-hour ask me anything on YouTube. So if my voice is a bit hoarse, then you'll know why.
It's lovely to have you on, Ralph, and it's the first time you and I have had a cordial. We've been exchanging messages and been a little bit messy because of things that have happened over the last couple of weeks, so I'm pleased to have you on. Ralph, before we get into policy, tell us a little bit about yourself, Ralph. You've got quite strong academic credentials. Tell us a bit about your background, where you were born, and sort of what was the spark to get you involved in politics?
Yeah, well, thanks. I was born in London, North London, to immigrant parents. My mother was Irish Catholic from Dublin. My father was an Indian Muslim, originally from the Gujarat, and then after partition, had ended up in Pakistan and then London as a young man. So quite an odd combination. Though there's a few of them around.
Yeah,
and I grew up in London, went to school there. Loved. And all that kind of stuff. Did a bit of travelling after university in Asia, backpacking, and ended up meeting a Kiwi girl. And that was my kind of connection to New Zealand. So ended up back in London, spent 13 years working in the financial markets, very similar to John Key in terms of the work I was doing. And we actually worked in the same bank for a while. He worked in Auckland, I worked in London. So I got to know him then. And really just sort of fell in love with New Zealand, really. I just found it to be an incredible place and always wanted to come and live here. And, you know, when we had young kids, we thought, yeah, let's move over here. So moved to Christchurch in 2002. And, since the last 20 years, I've been in and out of university. I've done a lot of non-profit work with budget services and children of prisoners and refugee resettlement, startup investing. And then after the earthquakes, Leanne said, look, I need somebody with financial experience to come on the council. Mm. I said, what? You must be joking. And so I stood for council and did two terms, primarily dealing with the post-financial situation in Christchurch and kind of fighting with central government on the payouts and cost share agreements and funding and insurance claims. It was a pretty exciting time. But, I think for me, I had a great career in the financial market, did nicely. But what really drives me is actually trying to build a better society for our kids, a better future, some kind of hope that we can do things better. And unfortunately, it just sort of feels like the last, 15, 20 years, the dominance of capital, which I'm very familiar with, over the needs of people, has driven, huge inequality, particularly wealth inequality, which is becoming embedded and is now reaching kind of astronomical proportions. And so when, I was speaking to top people last year, they said that we're looking for a new leader. And I kind of thought, look, I've done a bit of politics. And to be honest, it was rewarding in terms of serving, but I thought it wasn't something I wanted to do again. I did a lot of work with the survivors of the 15th of March terror attack, and I was kind of pretty washed out, actually. And I moved up to Wellington just for a change of scene. And but then I just thought, I love Top's policies, UBI, taxing housing properly.
I want to talk about some policies, and I want to talk about economic policies. And I've got a listener that, if you don't mind, wants to ask you some specific economic questions. So he's going to give you a call. Here is a question that I want to ask you, non-economic at this stage. Co-governance, opposed to it, for it? How do you see it working?
Look, I'm very supportive of this. I think it's a great idea. I'm very disappointed in, some of the reactions to it. And it's very much I'll give you two parts of the answer. One is personal experience of working in Christchurch with local iwi there. But also that we still have this kind of colonial settler mentality. And I'm reading a fantastic book at the moment by Amitav Ghosh called The Nutmeg's Curse. It's basically, it's all about imperialism and colonization and extraction of resources and essentially extraction of land from people with this kind of, you know, I guess you could say enlightenment understanding that essentially white men had dominion over land and anything on it and anything that didn't look like them. And it just feels to me like we're starting to come out of that. And particularly when I see young people, particularly with mixed heritages, I'm quite optimistic about the future and that we can change that. So on a personal basis in Christchurch, we didn't really get involved in things like, you know, should we have elected seats for Ngāi Tahu, for example. We actually set up a committee, and the committee was about co-governance and a place to come together. It was called Te Hononga. It was split between Christchurch councillors and the local Runanga. And it worked really well. And we got some really good things done. I was really impressed with the way that, you know, our local Runanga representatives conducted themselves. It was a very different way of working, much more collaborative, much more deep thinking about the issues. And I just think, geez, you know, this is actually the future. It's co-governance. It's actually people who care and are rooted in the land coming together with people who have come to that land, and some of them, yeah, who've been here for some time, to get fantastic outcomes and to look after this great bounty that we have, the land, the sea, the trees, the forests, the water. So I think it's pretty sad that, you know, some parties are trying to make this out to be some kind of terrible thing, and a division, actually it's bringing us together, and that's what I think is quite exciting about it.
Okay, now, look, I'm a fan of a new economic construct. You know, we've got this government who, in some way, talk about redistribution of income. You've got a national that tends to look after folks at the big end of town through tax cuts, etc. Tell me about your fundamental economic platform and how you think that will change things.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good way of describing it. I mean, National essentially come to you and say, we're going to give you tax cuts of $2 a week. That's great. And Labour come and say, hey, we're going to give you 20 cents an hour on your wages. Well, that's great. And we've been kind of stuck in this kind of psychodrama between National and Labour for the last 25 years. And on top of that, they both say, we're going to keep public debt really low. Now, yep. If you keep public debt low, you will underinvest in your public services.
Yep.
And that's why we're in the position. And Labour did that. I mean, Michael Cullen got public debt down to very low levels. Now, what that means is that there's no public investment.
Yes.
Because the private sector tends to invest in stuff that provides a really good financial return. So it's riskier. It's more unstable. We saw what happened in the US. And a lot of credit has gone into housing markets because that's the way the financial regulation has worked. So we've ended up in this system where we have astronomical asset prices and we can't fund our hospitals. We can't provide enough ICU beds. We can't provide enough nurses. We can't provide enough specialist support, mental health, and so on. So my approach and the approach the top will take is to actually not worry about public debt. Public debt itself as a number, as a percentage of GDP, doesn't actually matter. What matters is the quality of the spending. And what matters is that you're actually functioning within the limits of the economy, so capacity. So you're not causing inflation by spending too much money in particular areas. So that's kind of the big difference between us and both Labour.
So how does UBI work?
UBI essentially, it simplifies the welfare system. And it gets rid of the punitive, issues of red tape, admin, abatements on working, relationship statuses, having to go and tell your story to WINS and MSD all the time. It's something that you will have for life. So it is set at a basic level, which, you know, in 2020 was, you know, 13,000 a year. And everyone gets it. Everyone gets it. And I was quite interested in the Te Pāti Māori talking about superannuation age lower. for Marty. Yep.
Put him on.
Because of which is totally understandable, but in a way, this is going to be a UBI that starts at 18. Right.
Okay.
And so if you want to work when you're 70, fine. If you want to stop working when you're 57, fine. You're still going to get support. So I think the importance of it in simplifying the system and adding a little bit more dignity to giving people a basic standard living, of course people are still going to work. But the fact is, they know that whether they work an hour, 3 hours, 5 hours, they know that they're just going to be taxed at a flat rate. You know? So there's none of this clawback nonsense that we've got.
Ruff, I've got a caller on the line. He's someone that's very involved in economics. And if you don't mind, he's going to ask you a couple of specific questions and we're going to take them, if that's okay, yep. Ruff. Okay, then. So on the line, I've got James. Kia ora, James. Welcome to the show. And I know you specifically have some questions of Ruff. Fire away.
Kia ora, Shane. Kia ora, Ruff. Thanks for having me. I just had some queries in respect to the taxation on capital value. So I know the UK have got a system where they basically tax the gain at 1% year on year annually. Is that in terms of where you'd gather the revenue, Ralph? Is that where, I guess, the construct of this policy is coming from in terms of where you'd gather the revenue to pay for that $13,000 a year?
I mean, that's actually a perfect way. We're looking at a 1% annual land value tax. Which would, you know, provide funding for that. So you're kind of rebalancing the system. You're not relying on a capital gains tax that might be applied after 30 or 50 years, or not at all, because people don't actually sell properties.
Yep.
This is something that comes in. It's almost like a dividend. I mean, we've flirted with the idea of calling it the Kiwi dividend or something like that, because the value of land, and as kind of, you know, as Marty knows, it's like, it, you know, because they have been deprived of it and stripped of it. If you look at a lot of the wealth in New Zealand is in our land, and wealth of that land has been primarily supported by public investment over years in terms of roads and schools and hospitals and all the rest of the public infrastructure that creates value in land. And so we're just saying, okay, we're going to tax that at, you know, 1% a year on the value of that land. And yes, we're going to use that to fund income. So essentially, it's taxing, I guess, the productive base and not taxing incomes as much. So in a way, letting people keep a bit more of what they're earning, and we're all sharing in the dividend that comes off the land.
Sure. So it's kind of like a levy, like a national tax done outside of councils. I actually really like the idea because, you know, you have a lot of landlords, it's a total disincentive to them owning low productivity land. So essentially over a period of time, it gets to the point where, let's say they have $1 million property and they're paying 1%, 10,000 year on year, it gets too much for them to be able to continue to hold that property, which is a positive because it means that they'll have to push that back into the market for potentially a first home buyer to come up and develop that piece of land. I actually quite think it's quite a progressive policy. I'm quite a fan of it.
Thanks, James. And actually, you describe it really well, and particularly in terms of incentivizing development, because that's really what it's about as well. It takes care of land bankers, takes care of people who might own property which is sitting empty because they can't be bothered, you know, to rent it out. So it improves the efficiency of land use. And yeah, and if a landlord doesn't want to develop a property, they can sell it. So it's just going to rebalance things. And we have to do that. And I think you know, a lot of people are going to be better off because of this. And, yeah, it's going to be a reversal of the what's happened over the last 20 years, really.
Awesome. And just with regard to that $13,000 payment, that would be a standard payment for anyone above the age of 18, would that be on top of the current benefits, or is that essentially your benefit, the $250 a week? Is that your benefit that you will move forward with, whether you're in employment or not? You'd get that as sort of a retainer, yeah?
Absolutely. So essentially, anyone who is, let's say, on extra benefits above that will stay on those. This is about, you know, essentially moving. I mean, we reckon we can move about, you know, essentially nearly 4 million adults straight onto the UBI. Which is essentially that base level of benefit immediately. And then there's no more admin, There's no more red tape. You know you've got it. You have a break from work, you know you've got it. All those people who are not actually getting any income, the stuff they're doing at home, in their communities, on the Marae, they get it. It's just going to be a much more efficient way of putting, essentially purchasing power into communities. It's actually quite positive for the economy as well.
Right.
Awesome. Hey, thanks for that. I really appreciate that.
Hey, James.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, no, awesome kōrero, and a very nuanced sort of question, so I really appreciate that. Ralph, just finally, before we move on, and no doubt we'll talk to you as the election year sort of marches on. I think we're about 17 months away. You've had reasonably high-profile Māori candidates. Tuariki Delamere stood for you at the last election in Auckland Central. Have you got a program where you're going out, where you're meeting in the Māori community, and do you think you'll have the ability to attract Māori candidates?
I really hope so. I mean, I'm going to start an open sort of call for candidate expressions of interest at the end of April. I would love to have some Māori candidates come forward. I've met a lot of outstanding young Māori, you know, in all kinds of fields over the last, you know, probably 10 years, post-earthquake in Christchurch, you know, through Ngāi, but also through other groups like the Asia New Zealand Young Leaders Network. But the future is very bright. And look, I mean, we may even stand some candidates in Māori seats as well. I mean, why not? I think this is really an opportunity. I mean, I have no doubt that Māori will benefit a lot from the policies that we're proposing. I mean, a lot. And in terms of supporting whakainga and, you know, development of Māori land, that's going to be critical. And we'll be well in behind that. We're starting to, you know, and to be fair, that the government is doing some good stuff around that as well. And we need to accelerate that. So, yeah, anyone listening who thinks about policies, wants to get involved in politics, wants some support, please get in touch. You know, we need a parliament that is reflective and representative of our society, and we need certainly more younger Māori engaged in politics as well.
Ralph, just a final question. Ralph, do you see, if you were to get over that 5%, and you went that far off at the last election, just remind us where you got to at the last election?
No, last election was 1.5.
Oh, sorry.
The previous one was 2.5.
Two and a half. So,
but you know, we're certainly planning to get there.
Yeah, still some distance. But if you were to get over that 5%, do you have a natural coalition partner? Do you have people that you would rule out in terms of coalition partners?
Yeah, I mean, the way we're thinking about it is it's very much policy first. So we're about the policies, and we will do our best to get as much of our, you know, policy program into play with whoever wants to support that. Now, you would probably say policies are pretty progressive, so they're likely to find more support from, you know, Labour Green Māori.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to wait and see what happens. I mean, we'll be quite happy to just go and sit on the crossbenches, and we do want to work collaboratively, and we do also want to be persuasive as well to other parties who may not be the light, maybe caught up in old-fashioned thinking, because we'd like to bring everyone together. I mean, we don't want division, we don't want polarity, and I think in a way TOP is positioning itself in the centre, and we need a strong centre. We need a sensible party that is not tribal. We don't have a lot of baggage. We have a lot of young people who are kind of interested in getting involved, who don't really have a lot of connection to Labour or National. They're worried about the environment. They're worried about housing. They're worried about, you know, precarious incomes, job insecurity, the gig economy. They kind of don't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of just thinking, oh, God, somebody help us. So we want to get everyone involved in this conversation. So we can solve these problems we've got if we do it together. So that's what our focus will be.
The concept of universal basic income is a new one, and it's been tried particularly in some of those successful countries in Scandinavia, but it really hasn't got political traction, has it, Ralph?
I think we still have a little bit. I mean, certainly when they've done trials small-scale trials everywhere has shown positive results, particularly positive health results. But I think actually it's just a lack of courage. I think the last 30 years of neoliberalism, which has all been about the power of capital, which has basically seen people as just economic inputs. And you'll know this way better than me, but, you know, the sort of the narrative in New Zealand of, you know, the lazy beneficiary and the dull bludger, it's appalling stuff, but it's so deeply, you know, baked into people's psyche. Yep. And we have to just slowly get that out. And that's why younger people don't tend to carry
the
attitudes older people do.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly.
I can assure you, I'll tell you, if you give people money, you're essentially giving them freedom.
Yep.
That's when they will get up and do stuff.
Exactly. Hey, that's Ralph Mangia, the leader of TOP. First Kōrero tonight. Enjoyable, insightful, and really great to have a caller come on the line and ask you some questions. And we thank you for your flexibility. No doubt we'll Kōrero to you as we get closer to the election.